And we are live for a new episode of the Electric Podcast. I'm Fred Lambert, your host, and I'm joined by Seth Wintraub. How are you doing this week, Seth?
I'm good, Fred.
All right, let's jump in. We had a ton of news about Tesla's battery technology this week. The company went after a bunch of new IP, and they also published some new research papers. So we're going to discuss a lot of that. But let's start with the reopening of the Fremont factory, because we just had a quick development on it. Earlier this week, California's Governor Gavin Newsom, he issued a statement saying that California was entering into the stage two of their plan to reopen the state, and that would involve reopening some retail shops and the manufacturing and logistics related to those retail shops. A lot of people saw it as a good sign that the state is going to reopen. Tesla might be able to reopen Fremont factory, especially because it was vague in the way that would be presented the manufacturing and logistic aspect of it. But in one statement, he just talked generally about manufacturing and logistic reopening this Friday, today. But in another statement, he said that it was only manufacturing and logistic related to the supply chain of those retail location, which were like florists, toy store, music stores, like nothing related to cars, really. But last night, we learned that Elon Musk sent out an email to Tesla employees saying that because of that comment, they were going to try to reopen the factory today, this afternoon, like right now, basically. And Nature, representative for Tesla, sent out an email to employees too, telling them that they're going to try to operate with 30% of the workforce at the factory to try to restart production starting today. Now, we just learned now that a representative for the Alameda County, which is where the factory is located, has said that Tesla actually didn't get the green light to restart the factory, and it wasn't appropriate for them to move forward like they did today. So we don't know exactly the status of it right now, but it sounds like they might then I try to shut down Tesla's effort to reopen here.
Yeah, the exact quote from Reuters is, we've been working with them, but we have not given them the green light, Alameda County Health Officer Erica Pan said of Tesla. We have not said it is appropriate to move forward.
Yeah. So one thing that Newsom said earlier this week when he made his announcement was clearly that the state is only offering guidelines for reopening, and the official at the county levels are responsible for actually implementing any kind of reopening procedures. So if they're not happy with it, and of course the Bay Area as a whole and Alameda County included have been more aggressive than the rest of the state. They were the first to issue a shelter in place order, maybe in the country, I think. Definitely in California, but maybe in the country. And Tesla tried to defy that at first, if you remember back in March. They ended up complying maybe after a week or something of trying to delay the effort. And it looks like right now what they're doing is like they're giving it a shot again. Like the governor says that some manufacturing is going to reopen, so they are trying to reopen. But once again, it looks like they're going to get shut down at the county level for it. So we might not see Tesla reopening just yet.
Yeah, it's definitely up in the air. It seems mm-hmm. like a lot less sure than what Tesla's emails to employees seem to make it sound like.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I get why Tesla is so eager to restart, not just on the financial basis. Of course, it would help to have some production coming out of Fremont factory. You have this billion-dollar asset that's not producing right now. But also on the basis that they had this happen in China, and Shanghai Gigafactory had to shut down for a week, and then they reopened it, and they reopened it with social distancing procedures, apparently. And now it's apparently working fine. So, sorry, they see that, and they're like, why can't we don't do the same thing in Fremont? Like, they don't. That's what Elon doesn't understand. Like, why can't he not just do the same thing? And Elon also, sorry, sorry. Something okay? wrong with... Yeah, I'm fine. It's not the coronavirus. Don't worry, guys. And I was just eating some almonds before I started the podcast. Something stuck in my throat. He went on the Joe Rogan podcast again this week, and they weren't that much news Tesla related. It was a lot of it was about Neuralink. I think the first whole hour of the podcast was about Neuralink, which is interesting, but it's kind of far out into the future that it's not. It's more like theoretical talk than actually practical. But anyway, one thing that he did comment about the coronavirus is, and it helped me understand Elon's perspective on it. Is like he said that he saw the whole thing play out in China because Tesla has been monitoring the whole thing through their workforce in China where they employ like 7,000 employees, and they saw it get somewhat resolved to a degree depending on that if you believe the Chinese numbers, the numbers coming out of China. And he was so when the same things happened in the U.S., but of course that was handled widely differently. He wasn't happy about it.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like he's a little frustrated because mm-hmm. he thinks we're at the same point in the downslope of the curve that mm-hmm. China was at when the Shanghai factory opened up again. You know, something he didn't really talk about, but China's lockdown was a little bit more heavy-handed mm-hmm. than the U.S. lockdown, which, you know, I don't think they were going out for food. They weren't going out mm-hmm. for anything. You know, being in New York, I'm kind of privy to Governor Cuomo's talks. And like, I think 60-70% of the people who are getting the coronavirus now are actually people at home, which it sounds mm-hmm. like, you know, it's passing around in families and stuff. So that wouldn't happen in China because you are literally in your house all day, like kind of like jail. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. I mean, even places like Korea, I think, you know, they had another small outbreak at like a bar or something. So, yeah, we're still way, 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 way far away from understanding when it's going to, you know, in other news, Apple just announced some openings of its stores in certain states. So, you know, some companies are moving forward here. So, maybe we are kind of at that precipice of getting everything open.
Yeah, and of course, like Tesla is doing the same. Like where they can open the stores, they do. But if they don't have any car to sell because they cannot open Fremont factory, then it's not worth it. So, and that's where Tesla is at right now. And you could see Elon with this frustration on that podcast that like the one thing that he said when Joe Rogan questioned the legitimacy of the Chinese numbers, saying that the new cases are extremely low, extremely rare right now. And that like, you know, there's been a report of China like hiding like thousands and thousands of deaths related to the virus. And Elon's comeback was we have 7,000 employees at Tesla in China and none of them died. Even said like we would know because we do payroll and no one. So I don't know if you actually checked that information because 7,000 employees, like even if no coronavirus, like people die every now and again.
Yeah.
But still it was an interesting way to put it for sure.
Yeah, he's definitely got a outlier point of view on the coronavirus and we did a, I don't know if we're going to talk about this now, but we did a post on a survey done, and it doesn't seem like Tesla employees are quite on the same page as Elon's point of view there.
Yeah, to be fair, it was a small sample, but it was at least you could confirm that it was 50-plus employees because it was too blind, and blind can confirm, verify with employee emails and whatnot. But yeah, the majority of them thinks that Elon's Twitter right now is Twitter rants are arming the company.
And, you know, our readers who are heavily, heavily Elon fans, generally speaking, mm-hmm. Were also, I think, 40% thought that it was negatively affecting the company. Mm-hmm. And only like 16, 17, something like that percent thought it was benefiting the company. I don't know how you could think it was benefiting, but anyway.
Well, so, if he's more aggressive about it and they actually end up because of it opening sooner, then maybe it technically benefits the company.
Yeah, and if he's right in the end, maybe that'll make him seem smarter. But
But he was obviously wrong about the virus on things like that we already know about. So it would be hard for him to like claim victory at the end. I was right about the, like, you weren't exactly right. I do remember you saying that new cases in the US will be near zero by the end of April, and it actually wasn't even peaking.
What's frustrating about that is it not only affect, like, basically you should shut up about the whole thing right now on Twitter anyway. But what's frustrating is, like, not only is he taking out his, like, you know, ability to navigate the coronavirus with these, like, false claims or, you know, incorrect predictions, but he's also, like, kind of, you know, Elon's not the super genius anymore. He's kind of, you know, I don't want to say, like, a conspiracy theorist, but he's, like, on the other end of the spectrum when it comes to certain things. So, like, that kind of, it's kind of a bummer. Like, as a Tesla fan, I'm like, you know.
I mean, I wouldn't go as that far myself, like, because he's definitely right about some things. Then when you say, like, clear up the data, like, there's a lot of problem with the data and everything like that. So, like, he has some good points about it. It's just that the presentation is not there with the whole, like, freedom, free America, like, especially in this day and age where it's such a team-based mentality, like a tribal mentality where it's us versus them and everything. So when someone says that, then you put Elon Musk in the same categories than those gun-toting people that are going in protest right now, which is not a good look for him. No, even though, like... Not. You don't have to put him in the same category. Like, there's a broader spectrum than that, I think. Right. But that's how a lot of people see it, unfortunately.
Right.
All right. Let's move to the. So basically, in conclusion, we don't know exactly what's going to happen with Fremont Factory right now. I would assume that Tesla is not going to be able to restart production today as they were trying to, but maybe they will still, like, go through and, like, what are they going to do? Are they going to sell the Fremont police after us? Like, they might do that. I don't know. But we'll keep you updated in the next few hours if there's any development. But the team of this week, we basically had a team on electric when it comes to our Tesla reporting. That was like battery news, battery IP, battery research paper. There was a lot of things that came out. Want to go through them. And of course, that's all leading up to the battery day, which Tesla is going to lay out their clear plan for in-house battery production. But what we got right now is an update on the million mile battery thing that we reported on a few months ago. So things came out of Jeff Dahn's team in Dalhousie University in Halifax, Canada. So this whole new the single crystal NMC cathode, and then a new electrolyte, and later on we also reported on new electrode. So this time they are using it's basically an update on that research paper, which was based on actual battery cells. So we're not talking about like some theory about a new breakthrough and that. I'm talking about cells that they were able to test and that result in a longer. Higher longevity, longer for the battery cell, so they can go through more cycles, which in term of electric cars it result in more mileage over time. But this new paper here, it's basically the same thing, but with a different type of nickel manganese cobalt cell, and the highlight here really is like lower cobalt. So they made that cell with about 20% cobalt, which is roughly half of the previous version of the cell. And they did it while maintaining that, because the cobalt thing, like, everyone wants to get rid of cobalt inside the cells because of political reason, really, like the fact that it's related to a lot of it comes from Congo, and there's a lot of very bad condition for mining there, including child labor. And I think at some point it was even a possible involvement with slave labor there. I mean, I think child labor is basically slave labor. Like, you don't have a say in it.
Yeah.
Anyway. But at the same time, a higher cobalt level in battery cells that have been linked to like just better performing battery cells. So a lot of people say, all right, if you take out the cobalt, then you just result in a worse cell. But with these new electrolyte that they put on the cell, they are able to still have fewer cobalt in it, less percentage of cobalt, and a better cell. And that's what they achieve with this one here. So this new NMC cell basically has also maintained the higher energy density of an NCA cell, but with an NMC chemistry with lower cobalt. So all positive stuff, basically. They still manage this very high 4,000 plus cycle performance, which you're going to need in an electric car. But what a source told me here is that this version of it, so they're basically patenting or trying to patent and research all those different chemistries. And this one might actually be used for the energy sector. Stationary energy storage, I'm talking about. So power walls, power pack, and now the new mega pack too would be involved in that. And source said that it might even actually already be in production too. So that would be interesting. So new power walls, power pack, mega pack might actually already have those cells with the different chemistries. Because people have always been talking about like, oh, assuming that these new chemistries are for Tesla's in-house cells, but that's not necessarily true. I mean, Tesla has for a long time made chemistry development on the cells and just passed it on to Panasonic and other suppliers to just make the cells with the slightly different chemistries. So that might be the case here too. And that has, of course, great implications because that's one of the things of stationary storage. They have sometimes, depending on the market condition, a longer return on investment. Like in places like Australia, it's no problem. Like the return on investment is pretty quick. But here in the US, depending on specific markets, a lot of places, like for you example, with your power walls, they are mainly there for backup power. Like that's where you see most of the value, I assume, like in terms of like net metering and things like that and time of use. It would be a long time before it would be a good return on investment, right?
Yeah, I mean, that, you know, the best case scenario, like for, there's two scenarios for power walls. One is you're doing shifting of electric usage. Mm-hmm. So if you have the high periods of time, high cost periods of time, you go off the power wall then charge the power wall either through the sun or through the grid during the low periods of time. And then the other thing with the power walls is when the grid goes down, it snaps over and your house is powered off the power wall.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, clearly like improvements there would be welcome.
Yeah. Because there's some places like we're talking about 6-7 years of return on investment on the power wall.
Right.
And Tesla, of course, warranty it for 10 years. So it's not that bad, but then you just have a 4 years of warranty on, where the product is actually having a financial benefit to you. So the longer that period is, the better it is for the customer.
Yeah.
So knowing that your battery is going to last not just 10 years, but 15, 20 years, then now that's starting to make a ton of sense to have these in every home, really.
Right. And, you know, we did the calculations and our payback's like 6 or 7 years in Vermont. Like you said, if the warranty goes 20 years, I mean, we're on a 10 year now, so we're probably in good shape. Like it's hard to imagine a scenario where we're not going to get our money back. But if you do that over 20 years, it even makes more sense with the time shifting. As for the backup, I still wonder if it's going to make more sense in the long run to pull the batteries out of your car. Not, you know, not literally pull the batteries out of the car, but pull the electricity out of your car for the rare backup case.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because that's the fear of doing that vehicle to home, is that right. If you're doing too often, you're just affecting, putting more cycles on your car battery, which might affect the longevity of it.
Right.
But if you're not doing that for time of use purposes, you're doing just for backup purposes. I mean, depending on where you're located, it's not that often. I mean,
hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully. There's some places that are known to be worse than others in terms of brownouts and blackouts, but
yeah, I mean, it's certainly not like backing up your house is certainly not any worse than, you know, riding your car around. Your house isn't going to use like 50 kilowatts, which, you know, is like kind of, you know, getting up to highway speed pretty easily. So you're definitely not going to tax your batteries too much on a few backup cycles versus, driving.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fair. So some other battery improvements here. We saw a new patent application that Elon even commented on, saying that it's more important than its sound. Okay, so let me tell you how it sounds. It's a patent on a battery cell with a tabless electrode. So it's basically a brand new way to assemble a cell to reduce the resistance in the cell itself. But from what I like, I'm not an expert in that, of course, but from what I take from the patent application, it's completely different way to build a battery cell here, or at least like a big step. But the goal is to reduce the resistance by making the electrode tabless. So Elon says it's more important than it sounds. So we're not sure exactly what he means by that, because again, it's far from a clear, like, yes, it reduces the resistance of the cell, but more important than it sounds. Like, what does that mean from there? My only speculation on it is that it might be something they need to do as part of moving away from a module type of design for the battery pack. So Elon has been talking about that lately, saying that they might not need to actually do modules. Right now, they take the cells, they put the cells in modules, they put the modules in the battery pack. So there's a certain number of cells per module and a certain number of modules per pack. But Elon alluded that you might not need to have an actual modules, and you can just skip that step and just do cells to pack. So instead of having like a dozen modules with a few hundred cells in it, you would have just thousands of cells in one single big battery pack. Of course, the modules have their benefit in terms like of thermal management. You can have like cooling on them, and the cooling can be manage per modules, but it's an interesting theory. I think we won't know more until the battery day probably, but I have no other way to explain this comment about it being more important than it sounds.
Yeah, so I was reading a comment, I think I can't remember where it was, but it might have been on our post about this, and it sounds like it's going to make manufacturing quite a bit easier because you don't have to have that tab. But also it's going to make the resistance lower.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you don't have to go through one single point of entry. You're going on the outside of the thing, which, like, it doesn't seem like, well, why would you ever have done it the other way? But, you know, I don't know battery technology that well. So.
But it's a big deal. So we're going to probably learn more about it on the battery day. But it sounds more like something that is going to be part of a broader thing, really. Like, so it might be something that could be combined with the other, like the chemistry changes that they're doing to the battery. So that's a change to the actual battery format of the cell. So Tesla is really attacking this on all different fronts, which is very interesting. Another a little bit more out there was a research paper that Tesla's Jeff Dahn team published earlier this week, and it's about a hybrid lithium metal and lithium ion cell, which basically, like, the only way I could put it, like, I refer to it as a all electric range extender, because that's the thing that makes the most sense to me, but it's not a perfect analogy, of course. So the problem with lithium metal cell is that they do offer a great energy density, but they're not great for multiple cycling, so they don't last that long. But what Jeff Dahn's team put together, and it was put together with two Tesla engineers too, and financed by Tesla, this new research, which is, again, it's early stage research. It's not going to be in production anytime soon, if it ever gets to production, but I thought it was an interesting concept. So with this hybrid version of the cell can operate in lithium ion mode and can operate in lithium metal mode, which offers different energy density. But you would want to operate the cell most of the time in lithium ion mode because it's the version of it that's going to have the highest, the best longevity. The example that he gave was if you put this in an electric car, it would deliver a daily range on the lithium ion version of the battery of 400 kilometers. And then 480 could be achieved if you cycle the cell on the lithium metal mode. They call it a mode. So I'm not even sure how they switch between the mode, but apparently they can with this hybrid version of the cell. So the idea is that you get 400 miles for your daily driving, and then if you need it, if you need like an 80 kilometers more, if you need, you're going on a road trip, you could change within the car the cycle of the cell to a lithium metal cycle, which would result in the cell degrading a little bit faster, but it would enable you to do a longer road trip. So,
and you would use that a few times a year.
Yeah, when you need to. And they still talk about achieving a decent number of cycle on the lithium metal mode of the cell. So there's that too. Like, it's not like you're gonna. But I feel like some people are, even if you can get like, let's say 100 cycles out of the lithium metal mode, which would technically be like 100 road trips or whatever. Which if people do like 5 a year, that's still a lot. Like that's still like 20 years of road tripping. So even if like the math makes sense, like some people would be, like I don't want to cycle my car on lithium metal because it's going to degrade faster or something. So I think there'd be like some psychological barrier to it. But it made sense. Like technically, like we do drive, commute is much shorter, and we carry a bigger battery pack that we never actually use that much. We do sometimes, so 90% of the time we use like 20% or 30% of the pack, which I think that's the actual figures are closer to that. Which is why that's interesting, but at the same time, the numbers they're talking about, like going from 400 kilometers to 480, it's not that big of a difference here. So would you really like need to have like all different chemistry for that little of a difference?
Yeah, and also like the fact that we're filling our batteries all the way 100% to go on these trips already,
mm-hmm.
and you know, we know that filling it to 100% degrades the battery a little bit faster than keeping it, you know, 80 or 90% full. So we're already kind of doing this, you know, experiment. And I would say like some people are definitely not, you know, they never want to charge their batteries fully. But other mm-hmm. people are like, I don't care. Like, I'm just going to charge it fully and see what, you know, whatever happens. You know, if you have a lease, like, you don't have any incentive not to charge it fully, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, like, my Tesla experience guy or whatever was like, yeah, just, you got a 3-year lease. You just, you know, charge it to 100%. Who cares? And I was like, all right. So, you know, it's an interesting problem, or you know, whatever to solve. I just don't know if it's going to be that big of a, you know, it sounds like a complicated system to like switch.
Yeah, that's my concern too. Yeah,
but and you're, it's not like you get double the range or something crazy. You just get a small amount.
Yeah, if it was something like that might be really interesting. If it makes sense cost wise too, of course. Like there's a lot of thing at play here, but I think it's definitely something worth researching. Like then that's what they did here. Like they came up with that cell, they tested it, and it worked. So at least we know that it's a possible solution. Now, whether it's going to be a needed solution, whether it's going to be an actual feasible solution, that's another thing.
Right.
Okay, one more battery news this week. We got a report from Korea that says that Tesla ordered a bunch of battery making machines. So if you needed more confirmation that Tesla is going to make their own cell, which I doubt you needed, but here's more. So It's one of those giant, like, South Korean conglomerates, this Hanwha. So I wasn't that familiar with the Hanwha group. But we, here in the U.S., we do know them for their solar modules and cells, though. Mm-hmm. They're pretty big on that. But apparently, in Korea, it's a giant conglomerate that do a bunch of industrial thing, including some battery formation equipment. And that's what Tesla ordered for them. So battery formation process is, quoting here from Analog, battery formation is the process of performing the initial charge-discharge operation on the battery cell. During this stage, special electrochemical solid electrolyte interface will be formed at the electrode, mainly on an anode. At the electrode, again, not sure what it means that. But apparently, it's one of the last stages of making a new battery cell. So Tesla apparently ordered a bunch of equipment from them. There was another report from Korea that talked about where the equipment is supposed to go, but that report, like, it came out after the original comment from NY, so we know that that's actually happened. But the other report talked about, like, the equipment going to Fremont, Nevada, Berlin, and Shanghai, which I called it unconfirmed because, like, we didn't have any direct word from NOR about that, and it just sounds like they listed all Tesla's location, basically. So though we know that for sure Tesla is going to make cells in Berlin at one point, that Tesla confirmed that. We know that they are making some in Fremont as part of the pilot production line, so that's also fair. But Nevada and Shanghai, like, that, I wouldn't know for sure. Though it wouldn't make sense for sure. All right, moving on to Autobidder. So that's actually a new product from Tesla. It's been out for a while, but we never knew about it. It came out last weekend after a report came out from the UK where they said that Tesla was filing to become some kind of electricity provider, so to act as an electric utility in the UK. And as part of the filing, they did mention Autobidder. And then I found on Tesla's website that they actually have a page for Autobidder, which they describe as an independent power producer utilities. They provide, Autobidder provides independent power producer utilities and capital partner the ability to autonomously monetize battery assets. Autobidder is a real-time trading and control platform that provides value-based asset management and portfolio optimization, enabling owners and operators to configure operational strategies that maximize revenue according to their business objective and risk preferences. So what it is, basically, and if you're watching on YouTube here, we have a screenshot of the UI of Autobidder. It's software that manage your energy storage system, mainly battery packs, connected to a grid system and provide grid services like frequency management and also peak shaving and things like that. And the platform is basically used by the owner of the battery asset. And Tesla confirmed that it is in use in the Arendsdale battery system, which probably better known as the Tesla Big Battery, the world's biggest battery. It's in South Australia. We talked about it a lot. And that thing is operated by Neoen, which is a renewable French renewable energy company. So my understanding is that Tesla provide this Autobidder as a product, as a service to Neoen and other companies too, that they also sold power packs and mega packs too. And they use that software, that those companies use that software to basically sell the battery pack services to the electric utilities, which is an interesting concept. Like, it's definitely a step toward Tesla. Like, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the initial reports that you know, Tesla was becoming an energy company, this doesn't really sound like they're doing that. It sounds like more like, and I applaud you for, like, digging deeper into that report, because everybody was kind of like, oh, Tesla, whatever. But this thing sounds like Tesla's customers who order these huge battery packs need a way to monetize them. And you need a lot of inputs because there's a lot of different variables happening in when to produce electricity from the battery, when to bring in electricity from the battery, when to idle. And there's like weather, like if you're doing solar, there's or even if you're not doing solar with like air conditioning and stuff like that. There's usage all over, like just an infinite number of variables. So it sounds like this software is kind of grabbing all those variables, allowing you to put in some, your own, like, maybe it's going out and seeing the weather, or it's using historical data to kind of optimize the battery usage. So, even if, just a small bit of optimization is probably adding thousands, tons of money to the value of these things. So I'm sure this product is really beneficial to Tesla's customers.
Yeah. And through some of my search, I was also able to confirm that the same product is used by Green Mountain Power in Vermont to manage Tesla's Powerwall. So this is also interesting on the front that you could see the product being used by electric utilities like Green Mountain Power to manage a bunch of distributed assets, which is the case with the Powerwalls there in Vermont. They have thousands of them already now, including the ones at your house. So you could see a future where this Autobidder product is really manage a bunch of different renewable energy asset, energy storage asset, and an electric utility bids on using those assets, and then the owner of those assets gets the money from it on a much larger distributed level. So all the way down to like homeowners that have those assets at their house, solar and power walls. It's an interesting way we see a much more, which is something that people with infrastructure have been asking for a while, just a much smarter grid. And I think that's what we're starting to see here, Tesla getting into that business of a smart grid. So eventually, I think, it could result in some kind of being part of Tesla's electric utility plan. And of course, if you remember Elon's comment saying that Tesla Energy might become this global distributed electric utility that becomes even bigger than Tesla's automotive business, I think this could be part of a plan here.
Yep.
Tesla Fremont reopening, we already talked about it. New update. So there was a relatively small new software update that was pushed this week, 2020.16. A few updates is the redesign of the Tesla toy box. So nothing crazy here. Just all the things like the smart, the fart machine and whatnot. They are now more neatly arranged than in this little weird toy box that Tesla had before. This one is kind of interesting, the nearby charging station. So Tesla now has codified it with like just three different lightning bolts, and you can filter. So one lightning bolt for lower power station, two for level two station, I assume three for DC fast charging, and you can filter the station with this quick icons of 1 to 3 lightning bolt. So again, small update. Last one is the dash cam improvement. So that one is actually a lot of fun. Well, it's practical, I should say, instead. As most of you know, if you are to use the Tesla cam system or the Sentry Mode system, you need to have a storage device, a USB storage device, plugged to your car. And it needs to be formatted. Now, I forget which format, but it needs to be formatted. I think FAT56 or... am I making that up? Anyway, it needs to be formatted in a certain way, which you need to do yourself on your computer. And then you create a file with the right name on it for Tesla to put the footage in that file. Now, with the new dash cam improvement, you just have to plug your USB storage device, so whether like a thumb drive or SSD. And in the dash cam settings, you have an option to format the USB drive automatically, and it will also create the right folders for you for the files to be saved in. So a fun and easy way to get that set up on, because of course, like I still see nowadays, like people like not using the dash cam. Like I get in the Tesla, that's one of the first thing I check, if the owner actually like have the dash cam button on, and a bunch of people don't use it. I mean, if it's, well, if you already have a dash cam, I get it, like it's to a degree, like, but nowadays, especially if you have like AP2 cars, like with cameras on the sides and everything, like Tesla cam and Sentry mode is probably better than any dash cam I know on the market right now. So I don't see any reason not to use it.
Yeah, and all you have to do is throw in a USB stick. It's not really.
Yeah. USB stick, or I actually recommend an SSD nowadays, yeah, because especially if you want to use Sentry mode and you park the car in public sometime, those Sentry mode events can rack up pretty quick. So more storage is good. And you don't always have to like watch it anyway. Like if all the events come in, like if you come back to your car and you look around, and even though you had like a bunch of Sentry mode events, but your car seems fine, nothing happened to it. If you have like 8 Sentry mode events, you don't have to go through them and look them up. But I heard that Tesla is doing some improvement, is working on some things on that front that could be helpful too, where they will sort of like detect objects in the Sentry mode event. So they use their computer vision system, not just to activate the Sentry mode like they do now, but they're going to be able to mark, like, oh, there was an object that came in that. So they're going to be able to tell you where to look, when to look, and what events. That could be really a time saver for those people.
I would like a notification to come up with, like, pictures, you know, in the Tesla app.
You know, yeah, that would be nice, too.
If you're watching a movie at the mall and a notification comes up and, you know, a big event happened. Yeah.
Well, there's a notification if there's some big event happen. Like if there's different level of the alarm on the Sentry mode,
right,
and the highest level like is an audible alarm and flashing the lights and everything, and it's supposed to send you a notification on your app. But yeah, it would be nice if it actually like push a picture like this is happening right now.
Yeah,
that could be fun. The Roadster. All right. So that was the main piece of news that came out of the Joe Rogan interview related to Tesla. So Rogan asked him, like, when is he going to be able to actually get one of those Roadster? And Elon was being a little bit vague about it. And then he started listing a bunch of things that needs to happen before Tesla released the new Roadster. And those things included ramping up Model Y production. That one we can put aside because it's pretty vague. Getting Gigafactory Berlin to production. This one, right now, the official timeline is July 2021. Expanding Gigafactory Shanghai, that's also pretty vague. Getting Tesla Semi to production. Now we know that that's 2021. Not sure when. And the last one, getting Tesla Cybertruck to production. And then Rogan even hadn't confirmed that, because he was like, but the Roadster is coming before the Cybertruck, right? And he was like, no, not really. Like, Cybertruck is probably the priority here. He called dessert. Like, it was the Roadster is the dessert. It's not the main meal. It's not the main course. So basically what that does, if you consider that the Cybertruck is only coming in late 2021, and that's base case scenario, really best case scenario, because
yeah, they don't even have a factory yet, or a location for a factory.
Yeah, they don't even have the location for the factory. Apparently, that's coming in the next few weeks, which is nice. But still, like, once they have the location, they have to build it, then they have to start production in it. So, like, best case scenario, late 2021. So that pushed the Roadster most likely to 2022, which is now 2 years late over the original announcement in 2020. So now that's starting to be a bigger deal here. On the bright side, if you consider that on the bright side, he did say that the wait is going to be worth it, okay? Mm-hmm. But then he all repeated the same thing about, like, the 1.9 seconds, 0 to 60 and things like that, only being the base version, without confirming any new spec for the higher-end version.
Didn't he ratchet up didn't Tesla say it had changed from 1.9 seconds, 0 to 60 to 2.1 at some point?
No, I think so. That's some people that put like the Canadian version of the website instead of something, and then they have to do 0 to 100 kilometers an hour, which is 0 to 62 miles per hour. Yeah. He did reiterate also that the SpaceX package, which consists of those cold air thrusters that he was talking about before, that's still part of the plan. So that's probably still going to be the what constitute the Ariane version of it that's going to do better than 1.9 seconds. I mean, that's disappointing, especially for us, since we apparently have some Roadster coming as part of the referral program. But where it starts getting really crazy, I think, is like the referral program is one thing, like, but if someone put, like, Tesla was asking for $250,000 deposit on this thing for the main version.
I can't
version.
Imagine anybody still has their.
Yeah, you have to give that up at that point. Like, if he keeps pushing it like that, like when he said that it wasn't a priority anymore, it's like, okay, not a priority, but maybe 2021, maybe something like that. But now at this point, when he says, no, we got to put the Cybertruck out first. Oh, okay. Cybertruck was unveiled just a few months ago, just like 6 months ago.
And how long is the line going to be for these things? Like, I mean, if they make any, you know, like, obviously people are going to want them. I'm certainly going to be excited to see them. But like, I don't think a $250,000 car is anywhere near mainstream. So there's going to be a limited number of people. Like, maybe you get it a month later or something. I don't know.
Yeah. So what you mean is like the reservation process is not that. I mean, I don't know. You know, when Tesla released a new like high-end Model S, like a lot of people upgrades to it.
Right.
Like there's a lot of Model S performance out there, and like those cars are $150,000 sometimes, or at least maybe not nowadays. Like you can get them cheaper a little bit, but like for a while they were $150,000. So I think there's a big group of people out there. When I say big, I mean in the thousands at least, maybe up to 10,000 of them, that always want the highest performance Tesla out there. I think so. That's a relatively big market.
Okay, here's a question. If Tesla said to you, let's say August, instead of getting your Roadster, we will let you have a Plaid Model S today, would you do that?
Well, technically, I have two Roadster coming as part of the referral program. So yeah, I would probably do it.
For one of them.
For one of them, but I really want that Roadster bad.
I don't know if I'd really want a Roadster. Like it would certainly be cool to drive in. It would be awesome to take to a track. But like on a day-to-day basis, do you really want to climb into like a really small car? Like probably, but like
you're afraid of the middle life crisis comments that would come with it.
I'm already past that, I think. But I think I don't know. It just doesn't seem like I want to get into a super small car, you know, that's really low to the ground every day.
Yeah. And also, you have a family too. So when you get on the road, most of the time you get on the road with the family and everything. So it's definitely like not like you're probably not the target market for it. But like for someone like myself, like don't have any kids or anything like that. I have a girlfriend. If it's two in the car, so like if we decide to do a road trip or something, that's a car that makes sense for us. So like even like so makes we get a lot more use out of it for sure.
Right, 600-mile range would be nice.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. The first thing I want to do with it is like travel the country with it, like go cross country. That would be awesome because you can actually do it. Like with minimum charging, but yeah.
Also, that acceleration, like 0 to 60 in under 2 seconds, that's like you know hypercar speed, and it's damaging. Like I don't know that I would ever want to use that. Like it's painful. I have a e-bike right now from Frey. It's a Chinese company, and it's got like a Befeng Ultra motor, which is like kind of the crazy one. And when I hit the throttle or I even pedal assist, it kind of like jumps out from under me. And I just wonder like if that's going to be the case with the Roadster, if it's just too much car. But we'll see.
Yeah. Probably it is, but you kind of want to experience it a few times still.
Right.
In safe conditions, of course. But yeah, I mean, so the point of it, like they're being delayed another 2 years, for reservation holders makes no sense whatsoever anymore. So it shows the continuously degrading value of this as reservation program. Like we've been saying since the Model 3, we're like, all right, like the Model Y program, the reservation program, that's not that important. And that's really just the nail in the coffin of Tesla's reservation, really. That,
right.
Same thing with like the Tesla Semi, where when those reservations were increased to like $20,000 a reservation, and then Tesla again delayed it, like they're losing credibility on the reservation process.
Right.
Then for the referral program side, I mean, a lot of people are like, oh, you guys cannot complain because you guys are getting the car for free. But which I get the point to a degree, but at the same time, the car, nothing was is for free in life. Like Tesla was using the car to boost their referral program, which helped them a lot in that time of sales because people did a lot more promotion of the referral program. So Tesla did use that with the promise of making those cars, and now they keep delaying making those cars. So there's also an aspect to it.
I'm sure people are playing a violin for you right now.
Yeah. I'm not saying like be mad for me or anything like that. That's not what I'm saying. But I'm just saying that it's still part of it. Like technically, Tesla had to put some money aside from that, right, in their balance sheet. No.
I mean, you would think yes, but I don't think that was. I mean, frankly, I don't even know that Elon was fully aware of the referral program because it seemed like at one point. He found out about it and just shut it all down.
Yeah.
So I like frankly I don't even I don't know. I think there was some miscommunication.
Yeah, it got out of control for sure at one point. I mean, I was surprised too when they said like I thought it was a joke when they said you can get a second one.
Yeah, Ben, was like, no. Ben Sullins came out and said, "Hey, I got a second Roadster," and I was like, "What the like?" I mean, one Roadster was already kind of nutty.
Yeah. And then Bjorn Nyland tried to get a third one. Right. I was like, "What the?"
Right.
It was like, oh, well, if you get a second one, that makes sense. And technically, it wasn't wrong. It made sense because...
Yeah, if you can get a second one, why not?
Yeah, because if Tesla was calculating, okay, if these guys, like, I don't remember anymore how many cars it was per Roadster, but you needed 55, I think you needed.
It's something like that.
Yeah. So they calculated that if they help us sell 55 cars, and normally it cost us like I don't know, like $3,000 per car for promotion to try to get the sell done. Well, this has enough value for us to give them a Roadster. So it made sense, but like my last tally was like 88 free Roadsters that Tesla was owed people. So like now that's like a decent production run of like just free Roadster, and then that doesn't account all the discounted Roadster because you were building up a discount up to 55. So right. There's plenty more people, like literally hundreds more people that are like between 10 and like 90% discount on the Roadsters, and those people are going to want
those. Aren't just like the base model Roadsters; those are Founder Series Roadsters.
Those people are gonna want those. Those people are gonna want those Roadsters because, like, why not? Why, like, even if it's just a 10% discount, it's 10% on $200,000. It's $20,000 that you're leaving on the table. You're gonna do it even if it's just to sell it right away.
Yeah, there's no way Tesla really thought that one out. It just doesn't make financial sense at all.
Mm-hmm. Anyway,
yeah.
Let's move on from Tesla news with Volkswagen ID3 got a confirmed date for when you're going to be able to change your reservation into an order, and that's going to be June 17. It's just for the first edition ones, which are a bit more expensive, but there's been a lot of talk about possible delays for the ID3, and Volkswagen has been clear. We're still going to launch it this summer. Apparently, they're going to try to launch it with like 30,000 cars at the same time, like deliver them almost the same time, which is kind of crazy.
Yeah, I guess, but when you're Volkswagen big, you can do stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if they actually do that, it's going to be a giant boost to European car sales, electric car sales in one shot, because 30,000 cars is a lot for European sales. It's actually, especially in the coronavirus crisis right now, that is plummeting the gasoline car sales. It's going to put the mix of electric cars, which was at 10%, I think, last month, which was already a big jump because, like, Gosling car sales were way down, it's going to put them probably like closer to 20% or something like that. If the market for gasoline remains low in the coming months, I think some people are predicting a rapid ramp up because there was...
I wonder if Volkswagen has any regret in holding back on some of these. It sounds like software is kind of the major hang up at this point. I mean, if they could have got, you know, a few sold at the end of last year and at the beginning of this year before everything went nuts, that would have been probably a good thing for them.
Yeah. But I'm sure like...
It's a battery issue probably.
You know, like a lot of people were saying that. I posted this week. I think that's my next post anyway. Like next move is the one. Was it my next post? Yeah, my next post. Next move is they have a weird situation. But the company is they rent out electric cars, but they have now like a growing like YouTube channel in Germany where they talk about electric cars. So it's like a big part of the business now. And we reported on them earlier this year because they found the actual parking lots where there's thousands of ID3 out there that are just sitting there for being stockpiled. And because they found it, like, kudos to Volkswagen for that. They were like, all right, I'll invite you to the actual factory so you can check out the factory and then what's happening with it. Because, of course, that post from Next Move created a lot of speculation about what Volkswagen is doing with those ID3s. And all the stuff about the ID3 was pretty simple. They said they did have battery pack and they were installing battery packs in them. So that killed a lot of that speculation. And the whole software thing too, apparently that's been also blown out of proportion where it's more like just refinements and like you're not happy with the user interface, which they shouldn't be because most automakers are way behind Tesla on that front. When you remember when Tesla first launched the Model 3 2, there was a bunch of software problems and features that weren't released. So it's just a different approach for them where they're waiting until everything is ironed out before launching it. So it's just a different way to do it. But one of the most interesting that came out of his visit of the factory, of Next Moon's visit of the factory, was that they confirmed that the ID4 was on the production line already and being produced. So the ID4 is this like crossover. It's still based on the MEB platform, so it has similar capabilities as the ID3, but in a little bigger small SUV crossover form factor. And it's already in production. It was supposed to launch later this year, but it's already in production. They're probably doing the same thing they do with the ID3. So production is starting, and they're gonna build up some inventory and launching at the same time with higher inventory. But the most exciting thing about the ID4, of course, is that it's going to be the first global MEB VW electric vehicle, because the ID3 is only for the European market right now. So the ID4 is going to be offered in the US. It's going to be offered in China. It's going to be actually produced in the US. So if they are being produced right now in Germany, we're hopeful that they are making progress in production. And where are they being produced? It's in Tennessee, I think.
I think the batteries are in Tennessee. No, I don't know. It's somewhere in the South, like South Carolina or Georgia or something.
Yeah, I want to say Tennessee, but anyway. And I predict that car is going to start around $40,000. So it's going to be a sort of a Model Y competitor. And that's the other thing that came out of that post, that he said that it was same size as the Model Y, because we haven't seen the car much really yet. We have a picture of it here. Because it was supposed to be unveiled at the New York Auto Show, which was canceled because of the coronavirus.
Yep.
So we have a picture of the ID Cross, which was the concept on which the production version was supposed to be based. Well, the ID4 now it's known as. So we don't know exactly the final form factor of it, but Next Move saw the production version on the production line and said that it was very much Tesla Model Y type of form factor, which is very interesting. And at a starting price of around $40,000, it should be very competitive. But also, Tesla is trying to put himself more in a premium kind of segment, so competitive more with like Audi and BMW. Like VW is more of a... I mean, some people consider VW like mid-luxury. I wouldn't necessarily go that far, but
BMW?
VW.
Yeah, VW. I would go mid tier.
Yeah,
they have some really like super small cars like Polo or whatever.
Yeah,
That are like super cheap in Europe, but in the US they kind of bring over the nice stuff.
Mm-hmm. And in the same category, there's going to be the or same form factor, the Audi Q4 e-tron. And we learned this week that it's apparently going to start at $45,000. I'm putting a grain of salt on this because the report came from Car and Driver. They did a whole profile of it in their latest edition. But they didn't go into details about where they got that price from. But they definitely were Audi seemed involved in the profile that they had on the new edition of the magazine. And they came out with that price, $45,000, which would be impressive because this one is a clear Tesla Model Y competitor. They're going to be in the same segment, which is a huge segment, of course. It's a crossover, small SUV thing. And at $45,000 starting price, I'm not sure if that didn't, again, not much detail. So maybe that could be after incentive. And Audi, of course, still has access to the $7,500 federal tax credit in the US. But if it's before incentive, that would be a great, very aggressive price. I mean, in comparison, yeah, right now,
crazy.
What's the cheapest Model Y right now starts at $43,000. $53,000, I mean. So if it's after incentive, it would be similar priced. Also,
I think that's more likely.
They're talking about 82 kilowatt hour battery pack in that thing. So it'll be a slightly bigger battery pack than the long range version of the Model Y. But of course, Audi, if it's the same as the bigger e-tron SUV, the efficiency is not that great, though they made some improvement to it. So even though a slightly bigger battery pack, the official EPA range most likely is going to be a bit shorter. All right, that's it for us on the news side. We can go through the questions right now.
All right.
If you have some, make sure to put them in the comment below.
Yeah, make sure you add your comment right now if you want to get on. Greetings from California. What are you thinking for Model Y production per week? I think 1,000 was what we were hoping for.
Yeah. With the shutdown, it's like so hard to say, like, even if they achieve like 1,000 a week, like, because they did say that the ramp up is much faster than the Model 3 and even faster than the Model 3 in China, which was super fast. So it's not impossible to believe that like end of March, Tesla was hitting like close to 1,000 Model Y per week. But getting back to it with all the supply chain too and everything, like, that's so hard to tell right now. So I don't know.
All right. We have some fans. What's involved to get Tesla cars to provide electricity to the house? Isn't the Cybertruck going to have a 240-volt outlet? This is from Jay Hill. I think what we're talking about is vehicle to home or vehicle to grid. We're talking about DC coming out of the car. So theoretically, your Tesla charge port would have a reverse electric where it would go from your car to your inverter, like you have a solar inverter or whatever, and then that would put it into the house. So the 240 outlet would be good in the scenario, like, you know, like a backup generator, like the one in your backyard. We're looking for something more kind of refined where you don't even have to do anything. Like, instead of running outside, plugging in the car, what would happen is instead of your car charging, it would stop charging and it would start sending power back into the house. And I think that's where everything is going. I just don't know, like, who's going to get there first and how long it's going to take to get there.
Yeah. Well, if you ask here, Jay Hill asks, what's involved, maybe he's asking like what kind of hardware, like it would be like some kind of bi-directional charger that we've seen before. Like, what was it, like Quasar, that from Wallbox?
Right.
Quasar. Yeah, so it would be like some kind, like you said, something that doesn't involve anything. You just plug it in, and then it's part of it's an energy storage asset, part of your home electrical system. That would be really the best. And I think the word they're using for that right now would be some kind of bi-directional charger that already has the inverter inside, and distribute the electricity to your electrical system.
Yeah, and some CHAdeMO vehicles like the Nissan Leaf and Mitsubishi Outlander can do that today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you have the hardware. So it's coming. All right. Marwan Tabat says, you think Sunrun News is in preparation for some major announcements on Battery Day? Sunrun announced that they were going to use Tesla's batteries, which is good news for Tesla and Sunrun, because Sunrun is now the biggest U.S. manufacturer installer of solar panels.
Residential market, bigger in the U.S. for residential market, which is what the Powerwall is used for. So if you guys remember back in 2016, like before the acquisition of SolarCity, Sunrun was actually using the Powerwall. But that was before Tesla acquired SolarCity and became like a competitor to Sunrun. So once that happened, Sunrun partnered with LG Chem to use their Rezu, something like that they call it, their own battery pack. But it doesn't compete with the Powerwall, really. Like it's, I think we're talking about like 9.3 kilowatt hour versus like 13.5 for the Powerwall. And that's with a cheaper base price, not even per kilowatt hour, just the price of the unit itself is cheaper for Tesla. So really good move for Sunrun to just bite the bullet and like, all right, Tesla's a competitor now, but we are bigger than them in terms of installations. So let's just admit that they have a better product here and use it in our bigger solar deploying capacity. Now, Marwan Tabit has a point where, like, because I mean, where he's driving at, I think, is that Tesla is has difficulties delivering the Powerwall right now. Like, they have way more demand than they can supply. So, why put another like giant installer like Sunrun to be involved in deploying the product if they can barely deliver it? Yes, in Battery Day, there might be some aspect to it that confirm that Tesla can ramp up faster their energy storage production with their in-house cell or with new suppliers. So I think that could be part of it for sure.
All right. So Devion89 says Elon seems to be following the same path as Nikola Tesla, which doesn't seem to be that great.
Yeah. I think he's a reference to Nikola Tesla ending his life with being in love with a pigeon and dying alone in a hotel room.
It did get a little weird at the end there for him. Yeah. Da Vinci says Battery Day will only be about having secured raw material supply chain for terawatt hour production. They won't reveal new battery tech and say, don't buy Model 3. Why? Because in 2 years they are obsolete. All right.
No, that won't be just it. They will talk about the new battery cell for sure. Certainly not just for the raw material.
Jay Hill, also in Las Vegas, SolarCity is much cheaper for roof panels and batteries. The competitors are all bad-mouthing SolarCity as a commodity product industry now. Will there be a Powerwall 3? Yes, I think
SolarCity doesn't exist though anymore. So they can be bad-mouthing them all they want. It's like,
right, branding-wise, they don't exist anymore. Yeah. But Tesla has commoditized. You know, you just buy like 1, 2, 3, 4, whatever, and you put it on your roof. But that's a way to get the price down and get more people involved. What do you think about Powerwall 3? Like what's coming in the Powerwall scene?
I think they keep making improvement to it. Like, that. So I'm not sure what they would need to call it a Powerwall 3, because like Powerwall 1, Powerwall 2, there was a clear like design change too. It also made some improvement in terms of capacity, went like way up, but, there was a design change too. So I don't know, like maybe something that involves like a bidirectional charger, that would be nice.
I was thinking the same thing. You're more like a caching thing. All right, this guy, Deviant Developer, says solar and battery are red herrings. Solar is an awful way to generate grid electricity.
All right.
In the UK, the real coronavirus data is heavily disguised. The government is in total disarray. Elon was right on about the data. Clear, accurate data will inform public debate properly. I'm not arguing that with that. I think that's right. Better data is always going to be better, but I think the data might be wrong in another direction, where like if you look at total deaths, and then you take coronavirus deaths out of it, there's still a lot more deaths happening right now in a lot of places, most places. So, and there's a lot fewer people dying on the roads, a lot fewer people dying, you know, out and about, a lot fewer crime in general going on. So I'm all for better data. I just think that his narrative is that there's fewer people dying of coronavirus. I think there might be more. I mean, who knows? But we all agree, I think, that better data is better data. is better. What do you think? Anything?
No, there? I agree 100%.
All right. Kobe Ka says, what do you guys think about Volkswagen's EV program? Would you call the Waggy a buy?
What's the stock? Stock,
I think
so. I didn't know that was the ticker of the stock. Cannot recommend personally. I haven't looked at their financials for a while, so and I don't know where the stock trades at right now. So I really don't know if it's a while. But if you're asking in general about Volkswagen EV program, I'm certainly more bullish on Volkswagen than any other established automaker right now.
Agreed.
In terms of EVs, like they're clearly the one that are taking it more seriously at all levels. I like their partnership with Nordvolt for battery cells. Like they're really looking at it. Like they really, it's like what they're basically where Tesla was, I would say, like 5 years ago, 6 years ago, something like that, but with money. Like that's the difference. Like they already have money and they already have a large infrastructure behind it. So they're definitely still way behind Tesla, but they are way better positioned to catch up with them faster because they have already a giant infrastructure and money behind them. But everything else, like they're thinking the right way. They're thinking like Tesla. Like we, a few weeks ago when we reported on the software thing where they admitted like Tesla is years ahead, that those are good thing. That shows that they are aware of the situation. They're not, they're not going into it with blinders on like other automakers where
right.
they don't really believe in the future of electric vehicles and they're just doing it because it's the trendy thing to do right now. Volkswagen is doing all the right moves, I think.
Yeah, so in short, I think Volkswagen, I think everybody's talking the talk, but I think mm-hmm. Volkswagen's walking the walk of, you know, the transition to electric vehicles. Mm-hmm. Remains to be seen if the other automakers kind of jump on board or not, but mm-hmm. it's definitely seems like Volkswagen's making it happen. Philip Lavoie says, have you heard if Jay Leno's Garage May 20th episode is the Cybertruck episode?
I don't know the date of it. Yeah. Looking forward to it, though. It just said on the podcast, Jay Leno, that they actually drove the Cybertruck through the Boring Company tunnel. So it, probably, it looks like they had fun with the prototype. So I'm looking forward to that episode.
Scott Mendoza, did you already talk about if Fremont factory is open today? We did. Go back to the beginning. But yeah. It sounds like they planned on opening it, and then the Alameda County officials said, whoa, 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 we never gave a go ahead. So Tesla probably going to try to push that as far as they can, get managers in, maybe you know start moving some stuff around, preparing.
Mm-hmm.
And then Philip Lavoie says, Fred, where are the Model X videos this weekend, right?
Yeah, I'm going to try to post it tomorrow if all goes well, depending on like I'm on. I'm editing it right now. I'm not the best editor at all, so I'm taking it a bit slower. But most of it is done now. So if not on Saturday, like if it, I can only post it late on Saturday, it's not going to be worth it. I'm going to be next week, early next week, but I'm going to try for tomorrow.
All right. Mo Herbert or Aber says, I thought Elon would give his kid some cultural name after the planet Mars. We didn't talk about that, but we kind of called the name. Like we said that it's going to be.
Yeah, you did say that last week.
It was going to be like the Space Invaders sound was going to be the first name, and then a stepping on a bird was going to be the middle name. So I think we called it.
So what is it? It's X A E X 12.
Yeah, but A E is supposed to be Ash, and then yeah. The X 12 stands for Archangel, which is the. Predecessor to the SR-71 Blackbird. Mm. I will say Elon owns X.com and the kid's first name is X. So he's already got the domain for his kid, which is, you know, every dad wants to make sure they have that knocked out. Anyway, of course they named it the weirdest name possible.
Mm.
Gary Evans, more than 1,000 orders per day for Model 3 in China, need another factory in Asia.
I looked into that report and I wasn't convinced by it. Maybe not, but it sounded like it was a particular thing after like an event or something. We know that Tesla did that big stream in China a few days ago too. So I'm not sure. It's just like the way they framed it as 1,000 order per day. That would mean like it's sustainable. Like they're doing that like every day, and I wasn't convinced by that.
Joel Sapp says, will you be live streaming during the Battery Investor Day if you don't go? That would be fun, but we're probably also going to be writing a bunch of posts, so maybe not. I would love to do something like that, like a play-by-play.
Yeah, I don't think people wants to. I don't think people wants to listen to us watching the stream.
Pawan Bajoria says, when and where is the Cybertruck factory location announcement going to happen? I don't know where. It sounds like Texas. And when is probably in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, by the end of the month, apparently. Like so around the time that they're going to do that battery day announcement, so they might combine the two. We'll see. But thanks a lot for listening, everyone. Please give us a thumbs up if you like the show. Help us up with the YouTube algorithm and whatnot. You can give us a subscribe button, too. We have more videos coming soon in your podcast app. You can always give us a review. That also helps a lot. And we're going to see you same place, same time next week. Ciao.